I think maybe there was fundamental debates and questions relating not only to the past about how the world was created, but to the present. How we look at reality is the debate about the concept of creation as being yesh ma'ayin, which is often translated yesh, something from ayin, from nothing. And they're two radically different approaches, a philosophical approach and the Kabbalistic approach. I'll present the two approaches, and I'll show how through the last Mishnah of the second chapter of Sefer Yetzirah, which is the origin of the concept of creation, Yesh Ma'ayin, points towards one of these directions. Now, one view of the story of creation, the way, for example, the Rambam or other Jewish philosophers have presented it, is that in the beginning there was God. God created the world, but the world is created out of nothing, meaning that there's God and there is the world, which are essentially it's two. God is transcendental. He's beyond the world, and there is a connection between God and the world, some level of guidance that God gives, commandments that he gives, but essentially reality and God are disjoint. In the essential teaching within the Kabbalah is that creation is not yesh, something from me'ain, from nothing, but from ayin, from nothingness. That the divine itself is nothingness, something beyond the ultimate level of divinity and reality is something that we cannot grasp, and therefore we refer to it as ayin. Ayin shows up in Mishle, in Iyov, v'chachma ma'ayin timatzei. Wisdom comes from the ayin, but aleph yud nun. But ayin doesn't mean nothing; it means nothingness. Something called nothingness because we cannot grasp it, we cannot give it names. And in the Kabbalistic worldview, the world develops from a reality that is we are unable to grasp, develops in many ways, becomes lower so that it can become more tangible and more defined. So the movement is from the untangible, that which cannot be defined, to that which is concrete and tangible. Similar to the way that in the famous book of Chinese wisdom, the Tao Te Ching, begins by saying the Tao that can be told is not the Tao. That which is beyond, if you could tell it, if you could define it, it's no longer that reality.
What's the Tao?
What is the Tao? It's that which cannot be told. So
something which cannot be told.
In many mystical systems, there's the ultimate reality is something which is not defined. Whether in Judaism it would be the Ein Sof, the infinite. In Hinduism it would be the Brahman, which means the infinite expanse. In Buddhism we talk about emptiness. And in Taoism talks about the Tao. It's that which cannot be defined, and because of that lack of boundaries, it is the source, the well, through which all that is ultimately emerges. So within Jewish mysticism also, the story of creation is not that in a place out of nothing, somehow God said poof and something was there, but the world itself is something that emerges from the nothingness. Now this is the reason why this is so significant, because this is not telling us only about the past, it's telling us something about the present. Because according to the Rambam's view, that the world came out of nothing, so there's God and there's the world that came out of nothing, and we are detached from one another. That's why according to Rambam, God is transcendental, he transcends reality. But in Jewish mysticism, as in many forms of mysticism, God is immanent. God is is present in reality in the world, and this presence goes back to the story of creation. If we see that the world itself as emerging from the Ein Sof, from the infinite, then all that is ultimately is an expression, of this divine source that stands behind everything. So this is something which is very practical. Is God in the world or is God outside of the world? It also gets the view about the nature of reality. If a view of immanence, seeing that divinity fills all of reality, we'll see that ultimately all is one, because all that is, is an expression of the oneness, or Sefer Yetzirah says that was that which was before one. So Tanya, we're getting close to Yutet Kislev, and we know that Tanya Mot stresses the pasuk Ein Od Milvado. There is nothing but God, as teaching us about the inner level of reality. Okay, so this is a very, to say the least, this is a very fundamental debate. Now, often, because when you're used to growing up one way, you'll tend, especially if you grew up in the West, you'll tend to see that a rational view of God is God is something far away, don't disturb us, we won't disturb you, far away, detached and transcendental, whereas a view of immanence seems to be something which seems to be a little bit strange and far out. But this is really very subjective, because there are different philosophical ways to look at reality. So inherently, one way is not necessarily more rational or logical than the other. I was once at Beit Knesset Yakar, once at an evening that the title was Why I Am a Rationalist, Why I Am a Mystic. And they invited Professor Moshe Idel, one of the great scholars of in the academic world of Kabbalah. They invited a philosophy professor who didn't show up. And the other person was someone with a long beard and some big book under his arm. I asked Idel, because Idel was my advisor for the doctorate. I said, you know, who is this person? So Idel said, he's a real Kabbalist. Okay, so later he defined what does it mean to be a real Kabbalist. Because during the lecture, you could see that every question people would ask, how Idel knew about 100 times more than the person with that one book under his arm. But at some point, someone asked Idel, how do you know if someone is a real Kabbalist? And Idel said, if somebody gets angry too easily, it shows he's not a real Kabbalist. And then Idel, in his great modesty, says, I'm not a real Kabbalist. And what he meant to say that, and this is really part of the revolution that Idel had in the academic world, to see Kabbalah not only as theosophy, about the study of something very abstract, philosophical about God, but something that has to deal with the existential aspects, and his feeling that somebody really experiences the presence of God in all, the oneness of existence, is somebody who's not going to get angry so quickly. So if you get angry, it's a sign that you're not there yet. Okay, but being as it may, one thing Idel said there is that, again, he said the topic of why am I a rationalist, why am I a mystic, he said this, how totally subjective it is, that if you go back and think about the basic ways that we look at reality, go back to the very beginning, the axioms, the underlying, how we each build up a worldview, making that point that it isn't necessarily more logical, rational, to build an ideology which is often called as rationalism to that which is called mysticism. And I don't think he's saying that any nonsense goes. He's saying that we have different, very deep ways that have a lot of wisdom behind them about how to look at reality. Could, and it's not the rational way and the non-rational way. Okay, so this is the introduction, but now I'd like to get to our passage in Sefer Yetzirah, which, as pointed out in a beautiful article by Professor Yehuda Libis, also I had the privilege of studying by, the source of the concept, creation yesh ma'ayin, goes back to this passage that we are now going to read in Sefer Yetzirah, and therefore we can let it illuminate what does that phrase mean. What does it mean to create yesh ma'ayin? Okay, so we're going to take a look at this Mishnah. We'll start, I think, with the first half and then continue later. Yatsar created mamash. Mamash, something which is tangible, concrete. Mito, from chaos. Okay, so we have one movement. There is chaos. The Bible tells us that at the beginning the world was all chaos. Tohu vohu. And from that chaos, the world's created. So from chaos, we get mamash. We get that which is concrete. And okay, so far so good. This is something we know from Parshat Bereshit. Vasa et eino yeshno. And made that what isn't, is. Is being becomes from eino, from not. Not being. Okay, v'chatzav amudim gdolim, and carved out pillars, me'avir shelo nitpas, from ear that cannot be grasped. Okay, so now if we just had the phrase, he made out of nothing something, then I would say it would be legitimate to open for commentary. What is eino, nothing, or is it nothingness? However, we have three statements all parallel to each other, and each of these we have that same movement, and the same movement is that which is above, that is cannot be grasped because it is too high to that which is concrete and therefore could be grasped. Certainly it's true, tohu, chaos, is not nothing. Chaos is something that can't be grasped. Rav Re'eim in Shul spoke about the personality of Esav, saying that we have Yaakov is the Ish Tam, Esav, he's often seen as the bad guy, but Esav is beloved by Yitzchak. So there must have been tremendous sparks in Esav. And he sees that as Esav is a soul of chaos. Chaos could go all sorts of different directions, but there's a tremendous power in that potentiality. So chaos into tangibility is going from something without boundaries, but something very high, to something smaller, but able to grasp. The same way, when we say later, carving out pillars from ear that cannot be grasped. When we know that in Sefer Yetzirah, the story of the creation, the first of the ten sefirot is the Ruach. This Ruach is spirit or ear of the living God, and from that fire, water, and creation emanates. We know that Avir She'en L'Tpas, ear that cannot be grasped, this isn't nothing. This is nothingness. Once we see that, we realize also that this statement, making eino yeshno, is saying that we take that which is non-being, nothingness, and that becomes defined with boundaries and becomes being and yesh. So this is the essential movement in the Kabbalah. Non-being to being.
Non-being is like potential? Is that,
yes, because not... And the non-concrete to the concrete, non-dualism to dualism, it's always this movement. And so this is the message of Sefer Yetzirah, as we've been seeing all along, but in particular in this passage, which, as I said, Idel points out, this is ultimately the source of that philosophical concept, creation yesh ma'ayin, and ad, which I will now show you based on sources that Idel brings. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just thought of it, but when you phrased it that way, and I heard this, it sounds more to me like a specifically irrational. It's Dafka trying to make it sound irrational, because it's phrased in the same way as, I haven't heard the original Greek, I suppose, but Parmenides, when he, which was Parmenides was considered a very serious thing, problem in the ancient world. He claimed that everything is one and nothing can change, and any vision of multiplicity in the world is an illusion. And the way he starts his claim is by saying, "We can't discuss isn't, because he lays out that you could have that the sort of hava mina that you could have is from isn't or isn't from is, which would he define would define any change as that, and he says you can't because that which isn't cannot be
become is.
Well, no, it can't be discussed. It can't be it's out of bounds for us as philosophers, or we're thinking about isn't. You can't think about isn't because isn't isn't. It's not something that is in the category of isn't. It just isn't. So you can't think about it. You can't. It can't be part of any discussion of anything, and therefore is can't come from isn't.
Okay.
And this is saying exactly the opposite. It's saying mamash mito. Something that isn't tangible, that is the isn't, can become tangible. And the
exactly.
Enoch from the
okay,
issue.
Okay, so this is definitely a response. And I think this gets back to what we spoke about the dynamics between chachma and bina, wisdom and understanding. Understanding is what I understand, what I could grasp. Bina, understanding, is considered to be feminine, like the feminine, the female that receives from the male and grasps on. Whereas wisdom is the seed itself. Wisdom is what's often beyond my understanding. By definition, wisdom goes beyond what my understanding is that which I do not understand. But Sefer Yetzirah talks about taking from the vision of Yechezkel, v'chayot rotzel v'shov. He sees a vision of going back and forth. There's a constant dialectic between the two, between the wisdom and the understanding. And I would say the tangible and the untangible that allows us to the more we grasp on to the tangible, the more, and we're able to often see more beyond. The more understanding we have, the more we could see, perceive into the wisdom. But there is the place which is intangible. The Zohar, the Zohar defines the word Zohar, the shine, the splendor, as that which can't be defined. The Zohar says that there are words and there is music. There are the words and there is the tune. And that which the Zohar, that which is higher, is the tune. The tune can't be grasped. It's the words are tangible, but the tune is something which is beyond. Okay? So, yes.
Maybe what you said about wisdom being something you cannot grasp, maybe it's about that Rav Nachman and Aristo before said, "Tachlit idea shelo neda." That the definition of knowing is knowing that you don't know.
To know that you don't know. Okay. Right. The Rambam has the. And everyone, right. It's the. Often we'll see Rav Nachman and the Rambam are the opposites, but that's one of the things that's a phrase that he got from the Rambam. Okay. Now. Okay. So let me just share with you some of the sources that Libus brought. The turning point between Eino Yeshno to the phrase Yesh Ma'ayin comes from the poetry of Rav Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, one of the great Jewish poets of the Middle Ages, that a lot of his poetry is based on paraphrases of Sefer Yetzirah. Okay? And, okay, so I think you'll have to look on, because I'm going to take this, I'll give it back to you shortly. In the second passage here, he writes, Ata chacham, it's praise to God. You are wise. V'chachma makor chayim imcha novat. The wisdom comes from the source of life, from you. maybe let me skip a little bit. Let's skip to the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth line. Ata chachma chacham umi chachmatcha, and from your wisdom itself, chayfetz muzaman, something emanated, an object from your wisdom. Samto kepol v'uman limshoch meshech, you drew out hayesh minayin. This is the first time the phrase yesh minayin appears. You draw out the yesh, that which is, from the ayin, from the ein, that which the isn't. Ki himashech haor ayotze minayin, like the light that comes out of the eye. Based on a view that people used to believe that when we see, it's light comes out of our eyes, and this allows us to see things. So here, the parallel here, yesh min ayin, parallels the light coming from the ayin, from the eye. So here, obviously, the ayin is not, ein is not nothing, this is the nothingness. And it's the same movement of the chachma, the wisdom, that objects emanate from the wisdom. It also appears in the...
In that, that yesh is already within ayin?
Yes. And it also appears in the next passage here, from Shochein Ad of Shlomo ibn Gabirol, Kana ma'ayin yesh, acquired ma'ayin, the yesh. So here we see the yesh derives from the ayin. And here in Sefer Yetzirah it was eno yesh, no, here already it's ma'ayin yesh. Kiyem amudim gdolim ma'ayin kamo. So here it's quite explicit. Instead of avir, ear that is we cannot grasp, it says ayin. And eno yesh no is ein yesh. So in of Shlomo ibn Gabirol, the source of the whole concept, yesh ma'ayin, we have, we see that the source is that passage in Sefer Yetzirah that clearly existence comes from nothingness. This is the correct understanding here. And again, as I says, this impacts on the place of God in the world. If existence comes from nothingness, God is present in all existence. If existence comes from nothing, God is beyond existence and possibly interacts, but the world is absence of the presence of the divine itself. Once my children, when they were ages 3 and 5 respectively, had a discussion on the breakfast table that I won't mention my kids not to embarrass them, but the 3-year-old came back from her kindergarten. She was really happy. She says, and she says that, you know, that God is in the heaven in Shemayim. But the 5-year-old looked at her and says, no, God, you know, God's in the heavens, the earth, and the mountains. But then he saw that she was a little bit confused. So he said, I'll explain it to you. He says, look, we're now sitting in the house, right? And in every room in the house, we're in the house. So too with God. And so what he meant to say is that the house is present in every place in the house. And later I saw that this is a passage in the beginning of Sefer HaBehir, which says that the world was created with the letter Bet, to teach us that the Bet, that God is the home, the Bayit to the world. Just like the letter Bet is like something big. It even looks like a house, because a Bet and Bayit goes together. And God is the home of the world, and then we have that famous saying that God is the place of the world and the world is not the place of God. I mean, the world is manifested within God, and not that God somehow has some sort of place or something within the world. Okay, so this, as I said, is a very, very incredibly fundamental debate. Let me read till the end of the passage, and then maybe we'll say a few words about this. Actually, maybe before that, I think somehow, in some level, their orphan views, maybe getting back to the philosophical approach you mentioned earlier, that in the ancient Greeks believed that the world, all that is, always was. The world, the world was never created. The world always was, and in and the religious view that the world was created, that there's a particular point in which the world was created, is something that very opposing to that. And a lot of medieval philosophy goes on this debate: was the world created? Can there be? Can we say there was a beginning to the world, or the world that which is always was? Now, in cosmology, the Big Bang took a very strong stand on that issue, and only recently they discovered some new evidence for the Big Bang. And there was a very moving scene I saw on YouTube that somebody, I think an Asian, who discovered the proof for a theory that was one of the major theories behind the Big Bang, knocked on the door and to tell the very aged man who decades ago made this theory, saying, here, I have the proof for your theory. But the Big Bang says that the world began. There was a moment in which the world began, a moment of beginning. But if we think about the Big Bang is a lot more closer to the Kabbalistic idea of Yesh Ma'ayin than the philosophical, because the world begins at a certain time, at a certain place, at a certain point, but it's not out of nothing. It's some reality that is beyond anything that we could describe. What was the world like before the Big Bang? So cosmologists would say, well, there was some type of a reality, but the reality that was before the Big Bang is so different than anything, the laws of physics that govern our universe, that we have absolutely no way to grasp it, to describe it. So it's real. The Big Bang is not creation out of nothing. It's out of nothingness, something which is beyond anything that we could grasp. To think that the billions of galaxies, each with billions of suns, that just our sun alone, you could put the planet Earth a million times into the volume of the sun, and knowing that most matter is between that, all of that was in a point infinitely small. This is something beyond any categories to think about or discuss. So in many ways, there's actually a book by Daniel Matt, the professor who made an incredible translation of the Zohar into English and just completed that translation. He has a book called God and the Big Bang, showing how so much of Kabbalistic cosmology is in line with the Big Bang theory. The belief seeing the world as beginning in light, a center point that expands, ungraspable, that it starts expanding out as light. In many, many ways, I mean, he has a whole book devoted to it, touches on this approach. Okay, so now let's get to the end of the Mishnah in Sefer Yetzirah to conclude the chapter. V'zeh siman. This is the sign. It's not in all the handouts. It's only those who have the original Sefer Yetzirah. Aleph im kulam v'kulam in aleph. We end the chapter. The chapter is talking about the energy created when you link letters together. I often say that there's a saying that man and when there's a man and a woman, the Shekhinah is between them. And the Gemara explains it is that man is Ish, which is has the letters of fire and the letter Yud. Woman is Isha, fire and the letter He. When they come together, the Yud and the He are linked, and from two letters, the letters themselves have no significance. When linked together, they've created the name of God, Yud He. So in that way, we could see Siruf Otiyot, the combining of letters, is that's what creates that from the atoms to the molecule, and that is what leads to all creation. Just like to create new life, we need the male and female together. Aleph im kulam v'kulam aleph. Tzofeh u'mamir v'oseh et kol yitzur, at all that is created, v'et kol dibur, all that is in creation, all that will be said, Shem Echad. All is one name. All is one. Because when we see that from the untangible, all the multiplicity developed, we see all is one. And we hear it, we say all is one name. Because in that first emanation from God, we spoke about anyone have the previous Mishnah here? In that first emanation from God, we saw that the first Sphira is the blessed at one, the spirit of the living God. Blessed is the name of the life of the universe. So all of existence as being the name of God. And we also pointed out that Shem Echad is Shem Aleph. Shem Aleph is Shin Mem Aleph, which are the three letters, the three primeval letters spoken about in Sefer Yetzirah, that the Aleph, the Mem, and the Shin, that represent the water, the fire, and the ear, Okay? Siman Nadavar, Esrim V'shtayim Chafetzim Beguf Echad. One symbol about how the multiplicity is all expressed in the one is in the body. In the body, we have there are 22 letters in the alphabet, and there are also 22 focal points in the human body. We have our 10 fingers in our hands, 10 toes in our foot. These are the paralleling the 10 upper and lower spherot. And then we have the two additional points are the tongue, which the ability of creating with speech, and the ma'or, the organ of reproduction, which goes back to that the third Mishnah in Sefer Yetzirah that says that the 10 fingers emulate the 10 spherot, and between our left and right fingers and toes we have our central line, the line of the chakrot, which is a line that we have both the point of the covenant of speech and the covenant of the Brit Milah. So these are 22 points that are in our one body, which express that the multiplicity that exists in the one in each of our humanity, which on some level is also one. And I think we will end with some beautiful passages in Rav Kook that give a feeling for this, about this light from light of the divine which permeates all life and which is all life. Okay, so Ziv in Shmona Kfatzim, the second Kovitz, passage 62, Ziv Or Elohim, the shine of the light of God, Hamamale Tolim Kulam, fills all the universe. Mechaye umravotam, gives them life. Mideshe noim elyon shemakora chayim, waters and gives them life from the upper pleasantness of the source of life. Harihu notein chayal b'neshamot, this gives the strength in the souls, b'malachim, the angels, v'chol yitzor, in all life, l'chush et pinmiyot chushat chayim, to feel the inner feeling of life. So to feel life, to feel existence, this is really to feel, to touch on the light that comes from the source of existence, from God. Sof davar, hakol nishma, et Elohim yira, ve et mitzvotav shmor, ki ze kol ha'adam.